I followed you, but no one else did, in case you were worried about that.
Then you're really good, because we didn't see you, said Sean.
Where did you pick us up?
At the hospital. Tyler told me about your friend. I gave a stakeout a shot, and you two popped into it.
Was that the Secret Service dropping you off?
The very same, said Sean.
Where were you?
Classified. Michelle looked over Wingo's shoulder.
Where's Tyler?
In a safe place. I needed to make sure of things before I brought him out.
Sean said, You mean you needed to make sure of us, are you?
I need help, and I don't say that lightly. And Tyler thinks you're okay, so I think you're okay.
What if I said the jury is still out for us on whether we can trust you, noted Sean.
I guess I could understand that.
We saw you following the guy on the airport surveillance feed, Heron Air Service, which led you to the Vista Trading Group?
Sean glanced nervously around. I'm feeling a little exposed here. Can we move to other surroundings, preferably with four walls and a door that locks?
Michelle pulled out her keys and smiled at Wingo.
Hope you can keep up.
They drove back to the motel where Sean and Michelle were staying and went inside Sean's room. Sean sat in a chair, Michelle perched on the bed, and Wingo stood next to the door. Sean said, We're listening.
You know a lot of it already.
But not the most interesting parts, certainly.
I saw the news, the Iran thing.
Did you know that was part of the mission? Asked Sean.
Wingo nodded.
And how did you feel about that?
It wasn't my job to feel anything about it. I'm a soldier. I volunteered for a mission. My only concern was to carry it out successfully.
Which you didn't, Sean pointed out.
Trust me, that one I get, snapped Wingo.
Vista? Began Sean.
Don't know much about it. Tyler Googled it, but there wasn't anything there.
But some connection to Heron Air Service, presumably.
Wingo nodded. Like you said, I followed a guy from Heron to Vista. That was the connection.
And the guy from Heron was of interest, why?
He was with the people who jumped me in Afghanistan. I figured having a private air charter was a good way to move money around, particularly over 2 tons worth of it. I also had a tip from a friend overseas that Heron was involved. That's what put me onto them in the first place.
Sean said, Alan Grant heads up Vista Trading Group. You know him?
No. What's his interest in all this?
It might be quite personal, actually, going back several decades.
Wingo looked confused.
Long story, said Sean. But Grant might have some personal vendetta, and he might be using the €1 billion to carry it out.
Okay, said Wingo slowly. But do you have any proof?
Not a shred.
Do you know what his overall goal might be? Asked Wingo.
Not a clue, said Sean. But if it required stealing €1 billion and publicly exposing the United States in a way that might lead to a war with Iran or fresh terror attacks that could kill a lot of people, then I don't think it's something to be taken too lightly.
So how do we stop it? Asked Wingo.
Whatever it is.
If Grant or a colleague of his was the source for the blogs about the missing money and the overthrow of the Iranian government, then that's something we can take to the authorities. Then they can bring the hammer down on Grant.
How did he even know about the Euros?
We just found out his father-in-law is Dan Marshall.
Assistant Secretary Marshall? Exclaimed Wingo.
One and the same.
He was in the loop, that I know for a fact.
You think he's working with Grant?
I don't know, replied Sean.
Wingo said, So what do we do in the meantime? Just sit around and wait for something to happen?
Personally, I don't like to wait.
She's more of a kick-ass and take-responsibility-later sort of gal, elaborated Sean, drawing a scathing look from his partner. Wingo eyed Michelle with admiration. I kind of like that in a person. She smiled.
And thanks for saving my butt back at our first meeting. Never saw the guy in the tree.
You had your hands full, said Wingo. And the way I see it, You saved my ass, too.
We can pat each other on the back later, said Sean. I'm thinking of a plan to flush Grant out and see if he's up to what I think he is.
Wingo's phone buzzed. It's from Tyler. He looked down at the message. Oh, shit.
What is it? Asked Sean.
Wingo didn't answer. He sent a text back and then punched in a number. Come on. Come on, answer the damn phone.
It went to voicemail.
Wingo said, You stick tight and we'll be on our way. Do not do anything or go anywhere, okay? Do you hear me? Do not go anywhere.
He put his phone away and looked up.
What is it? Asked Sean. Kathy Burnett called him. She said she needed to see him right away at Tyson's Mall.
Why?
She said the CIA has been to see her, and they want me to come in and talk to them.
How did they key on Kathy?
I don't know. And it's probably not the CIA, said Sean. No, it's probably not. But you said she called him and presumably talked to him. Did she sound scared?
He didn't say in the text.
You think he's already headed out to meet her? Asked Sean.
Wingo calmed and stared over at Sean.
Yeah, I'm really afraid he has.
He looked down at the text.
Damn, it didn't go through. It's still sending, useless piece of crap.
We've found the area around here bad for electronic signals, too.
But you left a voice message, said Sean. Tyler never turns his ringer on. He may not know I've even called.
He slammed his fists against the wall.
Why the hell don't kids call their parents anymore? Why don't they answer their phones? Why all this crazy texting shit?
Did he say where? At Tyson's Mall?
Michelle asked in a calming voice.
Starbucks, near the Barnes & Noble bookstore.
Let's go.
The three of them raced out of the room. Chapter 63. Earlier that day, Kathy Burnett had stepped out of her house and headed down the street. She had a tennis racket under her arm and a can of balls in her hand. She was planning to hit the balls against the wall in the park 3 blocks down. And she wanted to think about Tyler. He had not been at school, and she wondered why. She had gone by his house, but there had been no one there, although the Wingo's truck had been in the driveway. All the Wingo's, it seemed, had disappeared. She turned the corner and reached a stretch of trees that carried over to the next block. She was so focused, she never heard the van pull up next to her, and she didn't hear the door slide open. The next instant she was off her feet, a hand holding a moistened cloth around her face. She took a deep breath and then fainted. The van door closed and the vehicle drove off. Kathy's racket and can of balls were all that was left on the sidewalk. The van drove for well over an hour, winding through back roads and keeping well away from populated areas. Its destination was the little cabin in the woods, where nearby Gene Shepherd was buried. The cabin was dark, but there was a car parked outside it. The van slowed to a stop and a man climbed out, opened the sliding door, lifted out the still unconscious Kathy, and carried her into the cabin. She was tied to a chair and blindfolded. Her mouth was not taped shut. They wanted her to talk, and there was no one nearby who would care about her screaming. The van driver stepped back and put his shoulder against the door into the cabin. Alan Grant drew up a chair and placed it about a foot away from where Kathy sat slumped in her seat. He studied her features, prepared his line of questioning. He was not desperate in his search to find Sam Wingo, at least not yet, but he was running out of time, and he hoped Kathy Burnett could provide him a shortcut. He waited patiently until she came around. Her head flopped from side to side as she regained her senses, and then she held her head up and looked around. Obviously, all she could see was the inside of the cloth covering her face. Grant touched her on the arm, which made her jump and scream. He had done that deliberately. He needed her to have a measure of calm, but he also wanted her to feel scared, intimidated,
and desperate.
"Who are you?"
Kathy said in a quavering voice. "Someone who just wants to talk, Kathy."
"Please, please don't hurt me."
"No one is going to hurt you, Kathy. I just want to talk. And I need you to do something for me."
"What?"
"Tyler Wingo. He's your friend, isn't he?" She nodded, her body shaking so badly the legs of the chair were shifting slightly. "Well, I want to help him."
"No, you don't. Why would you kidnap me and tie me up if you want to help him?"
Grant smiled. She was showing some spirit now, but the fear would return. It always did. "It's complicated, Kathy, very complicated. These things are. You know what Sam Wingo is accused of doing."
"I don't believe it. He's a good man. He would never steal that money. He was a soldier."
"I actually believe you, Kathy. I don't think he did it either, but others do. And those others can harm him and Tyler. I'm here to prevent that."
"No, you're not. You want to hurt them."
"I'm going to take your blindfold off and show you something, okay?" Grant nodded to the other man, who turned and left the room. Grant moved behind Kathy. "Do not turn your head around, Kathy. Stare straight ahead. What you'll see hopefully will convince you of my good intentions." He held something out in front of her, and with his other hand removed the blindfold. Kathy blinked her eyes rapidly, and then focused on what was in front of her.
"You're with the CIA?"
she exclaimed breathlessly as she stared at the cred pack held in front of her. "Yes, undercover, which is why I can't let you see my face. What Sam Wingo is involved in is very serious. We believe he was set up, but we have no proof. Wingo is not going to trust anyone, including us. But we have to communicate with him somehow. Make him come in and work with us."
"But why do you need me to do that?"
"We tried to reach out to him, but like I said, he's not trusting anyone. I think he'll trust you, Kathy."
"What do you want me to do?"
"Can you contact Tyler and let him know that you want to meet with him? You pick the place, make it very public so you'll both feel safe."
"But what do you want me to tell him?"
"That his father needs to contact us. That he needs to come into Langley. You know about Langley, right?"
"It's your headquarters?"
"That's right, Kathy. There are people there who care about what happens to Sam Wingo. They want to make this right. But the longer he's out there, the worse it's going to get. You can see that, right?" She slowly nodded, still staring at the CIA badge he kept holding in front of her. This was a very deliberate action by Grant. He needed her to believe he really was with the CIA and a good guy. "So you'll do it? You'll call him?"
"I guess I can, but I can't guarantee that he'll meet with me."
"I know that, but I think he will. I think he likes you and trusts you. I know he wants the best for his father, and so do we. And his father will trust Tyler, I'm sure of it." Grant held up her phone, which had been taken from her previously. "I'm going to hit Tyler's number."
"I could just text him."
"I think he needs to hear your voice. If you text him, he can't be sure it's from you."
"Oh, right. I forgot about that. But where should we meet?"
"How about Tyson's Mall? There's a Starbucks there, right? I know it's not that close to where you both live, but it's a central place with lots of people."
"Yeah, we've actually gone there sometimes."
"We'll take you to the mall and drop you there. You meet with him, deliver the message, and then you go home, and we'll take it from there. How's that sound?"
"That sounds really good."
Grant smiled. "I thought it would. And your country really appreciates your help." He hit the key for Tyler's speed dial. He had the call to number twice before Tyler picked up. "Kathy?" She delivered the message as calmly as possible. "I'll meet you there," said Tyler. He clicked off. Kathy looked at Grant. "You did the right thing," he said. "For me." Chapter 64. Tyler hurried into the mall and looked around. Hearing from Kathy had floored him. The CIA wanted to talk to his dad. He could hardly believe it. Kathy had said they thought he'd been set up. If he could get to the CIA, maybe he had a good shot at getting all this sorted out. The Starbucks was up ahead. He looked cautiously around again. He trusted Kathy completely, but with all the crazy things happening, he knew he needed to be careful. The mall was pretty full, though, and thus he felt safe. He felt the hand on his arm and whirled around. He was staring up at a police officer. "Tyler Wingo?" the man said. Tyler stammered. Yes? "You need to come with me, son." "Why?" Another man in a suit appeared behind him. He held out his ID card. "FBI Special Agent Martin. You need to come with us, Mr. Wingo. Down to the WFO in D.C. for questioning."
"What about?"
The man looked at him incredulously. "About your father, Mr. Wingo. What else would it be? You running a drug ring or something?"
"No, but I'm meeting with someone at Starbucks."
"We all know about Ms. Burnett. We've already collected her. She's in big trouble, Mr. Wingo. Do you know what accessory after the fact means?"
Tyler looked like he might throw up.
No. Is it bad?" "It could be very bad, depending on how this turns out. Now let's go." They escorted Tyler out of the mall, and the three climbed into a black SUV with tinted windows. It immediately drove off. Tyler's phone vibrated in his pocket. His father's text had finally come through. He did not have a chance to answer it. The text sat there unanswered, as did the message his father had left on Tyler's voicemail. 30 minutes later, Sean, Michelle, and Wingo rushed into the mall. Michelle held up a warning hand.
"Wait, let's do this right. They could have used Tyler to flush you, Sam, which means they could be waiting to ambush us."
"In a crowded mall?" said Wingo. Sean said, "They've already done it once to us. These guys don't seem to care where they hit you or who gets hurt in the process." They spread out and advanced on the Starbucks that Tyler had mentioned in his text. When they arrived, it only took a few seconds to see that neither teenager was there. Wingo said, "They've already got them."
"We don't know that for sure."
"The hell we don't. They've got my kid, shit." He slumped against the wall and put a hand over his face. Sean put a hand on Wingo's shoulder. "We'll get him back, Sam. We just need to keep calm and think of a way." "I can't think straight. Not with Tyler."
"Which is exactly what they want to happen."
"Let's continue this discussion outside," advised Sean. They returned to Michelle's truck and climbed inside. Sean was in the passenger seat and Wingo in the rear. He turned to look at Wingo. "Assuming they have Tyler, they'll contact you to make a deal." "Right, me for Tyler. That's what they'll offer. And that's what we'll give them. Tyler goes free, there's no debating that. And Kathy too, if they have her. They may not want that. They might want you both. Tyler knows nothing about any of this. They can't be sure of that. They might be afraid you told him something." "Look, I'm just the scapegoat. They're planning to dump this whole thing in my lap." Sean said, "But they can't count on that working perfectly. Tyler is insurance." Michelle said,
"What did you see over there in Afghanistan?"
"A bunch of guys. They flashed CIA creds. The leader's name was Tim Simons. At least, that was on his ID. They said the plan had changed, that I was to turn over the cargo to them."
"How did you get away?"
"The truck was wired with explosives, and I had the detonator set with the button depressed. If they shot me, my finger would release." "And boom," said Sean. "Idiot switch." Wingo nodded.
"So you could recognize him, this Simons guy?"
"Yeah, but I already told that to my superior." "Colonel Leon South," said Sean. "Right. What else?" "I had a contact over there who helped me get out of the Middle East and back here. He told me that there might be a connection with the missing cache in Heron Air Service."
which was why you were staking out the place at Dulles.
That's right. That's when I saw one of the guys who jumped me in Afghanistan come out of the Heron Air Service building. Wingo slapped his thigh. I forgot.
Forgot what?
When I was tailing the guy from Heron, he drove into D.C. and went into the offices of the Vista Trading Group, like I said. When he left there, I followed him. But then I picked up a tail and had to shake it. Only did so by the skin of my teeth. So, they know you're onto them. That you know of the connection to Vista and Heron. That alone was enough to get you on their hit list, Sam, concluded Sean. I guess so, said Wingo glumly. Sean looked at Michelle. Do we call in the feds on this? If the kids have been kidnapped? No. If you do that, they'll just kill them, Sean, said Wingo. This is not a simple kidnapping. The stakes are a lot higher. These guys are not concerned with ransom money. They want me. Like you said, collateral damage means nothing to them. Then the question becomes, what do we do when they make their demand? Said Sean. We have to make sure that when I give myself up, Tyler and Kathy get out of there safely, said Wingo.
Easier said than done.
But there are ways, said Sean. And the ideal plan would be to walk away with all three of you safe. When do you think they'll call? Asked Wingo. Not right away. They'll want to make you sweat. Think about the consequences of noncompliance.
But that will give us some time to prepare.
Yes, it will, said Sean. And we need to put that time to good use. Are you guys expert with kidnapping situations? Asked Wingo. Sean and Michelle exchanged a glance. Suffice it to say, this won't be our first time, said Sean. Michelle put her truck in gear, and they drove off. Chapter 65. Whoever you are, you're not with the FBI, yelled Tyler. Tyler and Kathy sat bound and blindfolded in chairs. Alan Grant sat across from them. It's more complicated than that. You're bad guys, said Tyler angrily. You set up my dad. But he's back now. He was with you. That's good news, right? You're trying to kill him. You're wrong. That's bullcrap. Grant glanced up at one of his men who had hovered in the background, but now stepped forward and gripped Tyler's shoulder so hard he gasped in pain. Enough, said Grant simply. And the man let go. Grant looked back at Tyler. Why do you think we want to harm your father? Because you've already tried to kill him. How do you know that was us? I just know. Who else could it be? Maybe his own government. And you're right. We're not with the government.
Then who are you?
This question came from Kathy, who had not spoken before. Grant focused on her. Ah, now that's a good question. Who are we? Who do you think we are if we're not with your government? Spies, terrorists, exclaimed Tyler, which makes you bad guys. Sometimes spies are on the right side, said Grant. Even spies who have to kidnap children because there is no other way to proceed. Bullcrap, Tyler said again. You're as stubborn as your father. You don't know my dad. On the contrary, I know him very well. And the woman who was pretending to be your stepmother.
Pretending?
She's missing, said Tyler. I know she is. Do you have any idea where she went? No. Do you? You're very brave, Tyler, even though I know you're very scared. Grant reached over and gently gripped Tyler's arm. The teenager flinched. I have no idea how this will turn out, Tyler, but I do know that you will see your father at some point. I can guarantee you that. Why? Like I said, I need to speak to him. And once that is over, you and he can be reunited. Just like that? Scoffed Tyler. A call will be made. He will ask to talk to you. Then I'll tell him to keep very far away.
Are you sure of that?
I'm not afraid of you.
Grant let go of Tyler, placed his hand on Kathy's head, and squeezed slightly.
But your friend is, Tyler. Remember, you need to think of your friend here.
All of Tyler's courage seemed to drain away at this remark. Grant let go of Kathy, turned, and left the room. The other man followed, locking the door behind him.
When he heard the door close behind the footsteps, Tyler said, "I'm really sorry, Kathy. I never meant for you to get involved in all this."
Kathy fought back tears but managed to say,
"It's okay, Tyler. You had nothing to do with this."
A sob escaped her lips, and Tyler tried to reach out to her, but his bindings held him back.
"We have to get out of here, because I know they're never going to let us go."
"How?"
"We have to think of a way. Both our parents are in the military. They taught us stuff. At least I know my dad did me. How about your mom?"
"She made me take Taekwondo, and I know how to survive in the woods with no food and water, but that doesn't help us right now."
They listened as a car started up and drove off. Tyler said, "I can sense you're right next to me. If I lean my head toward you, do you think you can use your teeth to get my blindfold off?"
"I can try."
It took 5 minutes, but Kathy finally clamped her teeth onto the knot behind Tyler's head and worked away at it.
"I can feel it coming loose."
Another minute passed, and then the cloth slipped off Tyler's face and fell into his lap. He blinked and looked at her.
"Great job," he said quietly.
He looked around the room. It was small, and the only pieces of furniture were the two chairs in which they sat. There was a window, but it was blacked out.
"Okay, I'm going to get your blindfold off. Lean your head toward me. It'll be easier now that I can see."
In less than a minute, Kathy's cloth dropped away. They sat there staring at each other, visibly heartened by this small victory.
"Now we have to get these bindings off," said Tyler.
"How about if we sit back to back? I can work on yours. I have really strong fingers."
"All right, but we have to take it slow. They might hear the chair scraping the floor."
They managed to turn their chairs around as quietly as possible until they were back to back. Tyler could feel her fingers clenching and unclenching around the rope holding him.
"They're tight, but I feel them giving a bit."
It took about 30 minutes, and Tyler could feel Kathy breathing hard with the effort. But then his hands were free. He undid the rope around his feet and then quickly freed her.
"Now what?"
Tyler pointed at the window.
"If we can get out there, we can make a run for it."
"What if they have someone posted outside?"
Tyler slid up his baggy pant leg. Strapped to his calf was a cylinder.
"Pepper spray. My dad. He's kind of paranoid."
They eased across to the window, taking their time because the floorboards were old and had a tendency to squeak. Tyler slipped aside the black cloth covering the window and peered out.
"It's dark outside," he whispered. "That's good for us."
He examined the window lock. It was a simple one. He had the window up in another minute, taking care to slide it slowly in case it made any noise. He passed through the open window first and then helped Kathy. They stopped to look around. A black SUV was parked in the front. It was the same one Tyler had climbed into at the mall. They had driven away, and then a cloth had been placed over his face, and he had quickly fallen unconscious.
"Looks like we're in the woods," he said quietly to Kathy.
She nodded, shivered, and said,
"Which way?"
"Hey." They turned and saw a man standing on the porch.
"Run, Kathy," yelled Tyler.
She turned and raced away. The man hoofed it after her. Tyler stepped in front of the man and blasted him in the eyes with the pepper spray. The man screamed, staggered, collided with Tyler, and they both went down in a tangle of arms and legs. Tyler punched and kicked at the blinded man until he saw something. Kathy was not running anymore. A man shrouded in the darkness had placed a gun against her head. Tyler instantly stopped struggling.
"Big mistake, Tyler. An unforgivable mistake. said Alan Grant. Please don't hurt her, Tyler yelled, tears flooding his eyes. The gun fired. Chapter 66. It's been 24 hours, exclaimed Sam Wingo. Yes, it has, replied Sean calmly. They were at the motel where they had stayed the night, waiting for the phone to ring or a text to come from Tyler. Michelle was leaning against the wall of the motel room.
And we told you they would do this to string you out, to make your nerves get the best of you.
And we know Kathy is with them, added Sean. The news story confirmed that she's missing. Wingo looked miserable. I know her parents. Her mom's in the Air Force. All that was left was a tennis racket and a can of balls on the sidewalk.
No one saw or heard anything, which tells us these guys are pros.
But the good news is that although they're aware we met, they don't know that we've officially hooked up, said Sean. We're going to provide backup that they might not anticipate.
We'll have little time to prep. They'll call and expect us to be there shortly thereafter.
How do we get back on the offensive? Asked Wingo. I don't like reacting to others, particularly when they have my son. We've still got prep work to do. Prep work based on what? Asked Wingo.
On being Secret Service agents.
I'm Special Forces. If it comes to it, we're used to close-quarter combat a lot more than you guys. Michelle looked at him.
But you liked all the guys you fought with?
Of course. You go in willing to die for the guy next to you. Did you ever have to eat a bullet for someone you didn't like? Asked Sean. No, said Wingo.
It kind of sucks, but it's in the job description for the Secret Service.
And it gives you perspective, amended Sean. Such as? Asked Wingo. Such as never let the other guys see what you're looking at. It's why we all wore reflective shades. Now let's get to work. Grant was at the radio station. The construction work was done. Those workers were now gone and had been replaced with another set. These were not muscular young men. They didn't carry guns. They did not act macho. Their weapon was their brain. Their bullet was their keyboard. They were cyber warriors. He made his way around the interior of the old building with the new guts that had transformed it into a state-of-the-art tech center with only one goal: focused mayhem. That meant one act that would bring cataclysmic events across the globe. Grant didn't really care about that part of the equation. Others could reap the benefits from that. He was just righting a wrong. It was that simple. He was not going to let his focus waver from that. A reader outside the vault scanned his retina, and he entered the space, the only one with access here. He sat in front of a bank of computers and studied each of them. Progress was being made. His bird in the sky was searching for what it needed. It was like a private detective looking for a thread that would provide him a solid lead, which would coalesce into a suspect that could end in an arrest and a conviction. Only the elements were bunches of ones and zeros instead of flesh and blood, and his sleuthing was confined to wireless data zipping across the ether. The system they were trying to crack had more than 30 million lines of code. There were many ways inside, but once inside, the malware to be planted had to remain hidden, and that limited the possible ports of entry. Grant continued to watch the unique confrontation taking place on the computer screen. It was a delicate ballet of choreographed movements, feints, probes, counterattacks, and more sparring. It was actually far more intriguing than any clash on the ground involving guns and bombs. They were brutally efficient killing devices, but they lacked the intellectual purity, the high level of sophistication needed to carry off something like this. With any other target, Grant would have been successful by now. But his target wasn't just any target. It was heavily protected. It was known to have threats against it. It was one of the most famous targets in the world, in fact. And it had never been seriously threatened. But that didn't make it invulnerable. That just made it challenging. And Grant loved a challenge. Even the best security sometimes grew lax as year after year passed and no successful attack was ever launched against it. That was why he had a chance to do what no one else had ever done before. And he noted with a degree of confidence that the barriers to entry depicted on the screen were falling one by one. In fact, given this burn rate, he would be through in a shorter period of time than he thought. He drew out the itinerary for which he had killed Milo Pratt. He ran his eye down the column and finally settled on one that appeared to be in the window of possibilities. He sat back in his chair and dreamed what had for so long seemed the impossible dream. Revenge and justice. Two of the most potent desires in the world. They were not mutually exclusive. In fact, thought Grant, they went hand in hand extremely well. His father had killed himself over a scandal not of his making. Now the current president was attempting a similar and equally misguided maneuver on the world's geopolitical stage. Well, this time, the administration would pay the price. Grant's learning of the plan had been the prime reason behind the timing of his operation. It had come none too soon. The grief over his parents' deaths was becoming unbearable. Well, it was finally about to end. Chapter 67.
Where do we do the exchange? Said Wingo.
The call had come at last. The next night, when the rain was howling outside and the temperature had plummeted as the storm system struck the region, the filtered voice was mechanical, but the words it spoke were stunning.
There will be no exchange.
Sean and Michelle, who were listening in because Wingo was using the speakerphone feature on his cell, exchanged a sharp glance.
What the hell are you talking about? Snapped Wingo. I'm willing to come in if you let my son go.
That may have been your thinking, but it isn't ours.
What then? Barked Wingo.
Keep calm, Wingo. All you have to do is stand down. You do nothing. If you do that, you will see your son alive. If not, he's dead.
Wingo covered his face with his hands and took a deep breath. Michelle put a supportive hand on his shoulder.
How do I know I can trust you? Said Wingo.
How do we know we can trust you?
Even if I stand down, how will you know I am?
We'll know, Wingo. We have assets in place. You talk to anyone, go anywhere, tell the FBI about your son, give anyone something that will help them on this, we'll know. And then your son is no more. That is a guarantee.
Sean pointed to the phone and then his ear. He mouthed the name Tyler. Wingo said,
I want to talk to my son. Right now or no deal.
A few moments passed, and then Tyler's voice came on the line.
Dad?
Tyler, are you all right?
I'm really scared. These people.
There were sounds of a scuffle, and Tyler's voice broke off.
Tyler! Tyler! Yelled Wingo into the phone.
The mechanical voice came back on.
Stand down, Wingo. Then you get him back.
What about Kathy Burnett?
Just stand down, and you get your son back.
The line went dead. Wingo slowly sat up. Sean rubbed his jaw and said, Okay, that was an unexpected development. Michelle was eyeing Wingo.
We're going to get him back, Sam.
You have no way of knowing that, said Wingo bitterly. And it sounds like Kathy is dead.
Michelle looked at Sean but said nothing. It did sound like Kathy Burnett was dead.
Wingo looked up.
So there's nothing more to do. Except wait and hope to God they keep their word.
That's you, not us, Sam, said Sean. We have to keep working this thing.
But it might put Tyler in danger.
He's already in danger. And let's be brutally honest here. I don't see them voluntarily letting him go, whether you stand down or not, do you?
Wingo stared at her, the lines in his forehead hardening for a moment and then going lax.
No, I don't.
Our best chance to get Tyler and Kathy back is to find them.
How? Barked Wingo. You have nothing to go on.
Sean sat down next to him. I know you're under incredible stress. I've never been a dad, so I can't possibly know what you're really feeling. But I'm asking you to trust us, Sam. We know what we're doing, and we will do our best to get them both back, alive.
Michelle knelt on Wingo's other side and said,
The only reason I got into this case was because of Tyler. I could feel something was off with him. I knew how much he missed you, Sam. How much he didn't want you to be gone. I will do anything, risk my life even, to get him back to you.
Wingo slowly nodded. Okay. Okay. I do trust you. Please. Just get them back safe.
They left Wingo in the motel room and climbed into Michelle's Land Cruiser.
We promised the man a lot, said Sean, and now we need to deliver on that promise.
What about Kathy?
We said both of them. That means what it means.
But if she's dead?
We can only try, Michelle. That's all we can ever do.
Is Edgar our next stop? If he's been able to track the IP address of Carlton's source?
If he had, he would have contacted us. It won't do us any good looking over his shoulder. Geniuses work best alone.
What then?
We have a lead. We haven't followed up yet.
And what would that be?
Heron Air Services' connection to Vista Trading Group.
Edgar couldn't find any dirt.
He was just looking at the pixels. We have to get in the dirt to find dirt, the way investigators used to do it.
How? We were worried that someone there would recognize us.
We do it by stealth.
Again, what's the plan?
Conditions on the ground will dictate the plan.
Translation, you haven't thought of a plan yet, and you're buying time until you do.
He scowled. Feel free to jump in with one any time you want.
She sighed and looked out the window.
We can't screw this up, Sean. There's too much at stake.
There's always a lot at stake.
I meant with the kids.
We've been down that road before, too, and we didn't let them die. We found them and brought them home safely.
I know. I just hope we can do it this time.
A few seconds passed, and then Sean said, Actually, I think we can.
She glanced sharply at him.
You just thought of a plan, didn't you?
I just thought of a plan.
Chapter 68
Sean drove while Michelle kept an eye out. Nice neighborhood, he said, as they passed by some large homes with expensive landscaping. He looked at a few of the homes. Very nice.
Yeah, if you go in for that sort of thing.
What, no heaps of trash?
You're a riot.
They left that neighborhood and entered another.
It's coming up on the left. Third one down.
Sean eased his car to a stop at the curb behind a pickup truck and killed the engine and the lights. Michelle took out a pair of night vision binoculars and pointed them across the street.
So Leon South's house. And what do you hope to find here?
Hopefully a clue that will take us where we need to go.
I thought our leak was Dan Marshall, not South.
The more I think about that, the more I think it's too obvious. And we met with them both. You read the body language of each guy. What did you think?
That Marshall was on the up and up. South was curled in, gaze to the right and down, arms folded. Too much posturing. Too much defensive blustering.
That was my take, too. The leak had to come from somewhere, and my money is on Colonel South.
Motive?
Marshall made his pile of money. He can retire any time he wants. South is still on the ladder heading up.
but he's 51, so maybe he feels topped out rank-wise. Maybe he wants a better retirement plan than Uncle Sam is offering.
And are watching his house?
To see if something pops. He's divorced and his two kids are grown and gone. So we see if someone comes by on this dark and stormy night who might lead us where we need to go. 2 hours later, no one had come or gone. The house lights were on, and they had seen movement inside, but it was only one person, presumably South, whose government car was parked in the driveway. Sean stretched.
You want to call it a night? Doesn't look like he's going anywhere.
Michelle was about to say something when headlights broke the night. Sean checked his watch. Nearly midnight. Maybe it's a neighbor coming home. They both ducked down in the car as the vehicle passed by slowly. Michelle pressed her optics to her eyes and did a sweep.
Shit.
What?
That's the guy from Heron Air Service.
Are you sure?
Pretty damn sure.
But he's not stopping at South's.
Sean, it's him.
Sean started the car, eased out, and took up the tail. He said, we're the only two rides out here. He's bound to spot us.
Just keep it up a bit. There's a major intersection coming up. There should be some traffic there we can hide in. I don't want to lose this guy.
He did as she asked.
He's making a left.
Got it. They reached the intersection. Luckily, the light was green, and they didn't have to stop behind him where he might have gotten an eyeball on them, despite their headlights boring into his line of vision. Both cars turned right, and Sean backed off, sliding in behind a green Chevy to give himself some distance, but keeping the other car in sight. Michelle put down the optics and opened her laptop. She started fiercely clicking keys. What are you doing? Asked Sean, glancing over at her.
Hacking into the DMV.
You can do that? He said, looking surprised.
Edgar showed me recently how to do it. I know, it's not exactly legal.
Actually, legally speaking, it's not legal at all.
Look, I'm just trying to get some traction on this case, so don't read me the riot act.
No, I think it's very cool. Can you show me how to do it? She shot him a look.
Show you, Mr. Computer Illiterate?
He scowled. I know my way around internet stuff.
Sean, you just discovered emoticons last week.
She continued clicking, and then a page opened up.
Trevor Jenkins, age 41. He lives in Vienna.
Can you do a Google thingy and find out more about him?
A Google thingy?
Just do it, Michelle. I'm following a suspect here. That's apparently all my shrinking brain can handle. She clicked more keys.
Not finding much. Guy's not a celebrity with his own website and Twitter account. Hold on. He does have an account with LinkedIn, of which I'm a proud member.
She accessed that and read down the page. Well, said Sean expectantly.
Former military, West Point, 101st Airborne. He's now president and CEO of Heron Air Service. Single, no kids. Has a commercial pilot's license. He belongs to a number of industry trade groups, spent time in the Middle East, presumably during combat tours.
Alan Grant is also former military. I wonder if he was in the 101st. Michelle hit more keys and found that Grant also had a LinkedIn page.
Nope. Grant was infantry, but soldiers in the air and soldiers on the ground could still know each other. It's still the Army.
True. Okay, he's turning. Sean hooked the same left as Jenkins had. Michelle looked around.
I think he's heading home, Sean. The address in his DMV file is right around here.
I'll pull off the tail and come back around then, so he won't get suspicious. Sean backtracked to the address in the DMV file and got there in time to see Jenkins's car pull into the garage of a fairly new home, with older houses on either side. They passed by and kept going.
What did we learn from that? Besides Jenkins' identity, background, and where he lives?
He was in South's neighborhood.
But he didn't go to see South. He drove right by it.
That is a puzzler. Maybe he was just keeping eyes on it.
Maybe,
said Michelle doubtfully. Yeah, I don't believe that either, said Sean, noting her dubious look.
But we know there's a connection between Jenkins and Vista, and presumably Alan Grant. They're both former military.
And Wingo identified Jenkins as one of the guys in Afghanistan who took the Euros from him.
And a Heron Air Service plane might have brought that cash back here.
Not sure. I guess one of their bigger jets could carry over 2 tons worth of cash. You think the whole company is in on it?
Jenkins is the top guy. He could have flown the sucker in himself. He has his pilot's license. And what better way to get something like that through customs? The guy probably knows a million ways to hide stuff coming in.
Well, this is getting us no closer to finding Tyler and Kathy. Sean said, it's a mosaic. We have to find all the pieces, and then we can see the whole picture.
I'm not sure we have time to find all the mosaic tiles, Sean.
Do we sit on Jenkins all night and see where he goes tomorrow? He might lead us to the kids.
Or it might be a big waste of time.
He glanced at her. You got another idea? She sighed and shook her head.
No. There's an all-night Dunkin' Donuts 2 blocks over. I can run and get us some coffee and food while you stay here and keep eyes on Jenkins.
Okay, Sean said absently. She undid her seatbelt and looked at him.
What?
Don't know. Just something back there.
Back where?
Back at South's. No, before South's neighborhood.
What about it?
I just felt like I knew the area, been there before.
When? Why?
Sean shook his head. Can't think of it. He smiled resignedly. Brain cell loss. Maybe it's for real.
Well, stick your fingers in your ears and try not to let any more out. We're going to need all the thinking we can muster to get to the bottom of this sucker.
Chapter 69. Sean felt the nudge against his shoulder. His brain misfired for a second as his mind toggled between sleep and consciousness. Another nudge and he was awake. He looked around and saw Michelle next to him, her camera with long-range lens in hand. She said,
"Hello, Sleeping Beauty. Ready to go to work?"
They had taken shifts, 2 hours on, 2 hours asleep. "What time is it?" asked Sean as he blinked, yawned, and sat up straight.
"A few minutes after 8.
Sean gazed outside. The rain and gloom were still with him. It still felt dark. Any movement on Jenkins?
Not yet. Lights went on at 7 sharp. Probably had his alarm set. I've been snapping pictures of anything relevant.
Action on the street?
Early morning commuters, sleepy kids straggling to bus stops, couple of joggers running in the rain to stay healthy before they drop dead from pneumonia.
Michelle reached into the console, took out a protein bar, ripped off the cover, dropped the plastic on the floorboard, and bit into the chocolate. She eyed Sean, who was staring at the trash on the floor. She held out the protein bar.
Want a bite?
I'd rather read mouse droppings. Actually, that's probably what's in there. Lots of protein in poop.
What do we do when he comes out?
Tail him.
He might spot us.
He might, but we have to risk it. He's the only viable lead we have right now.
Are we making a huge mistake by not calling in Littlefield and the FBI?
Sean rubbed the kinks out of his neck, slapped himself a few times in the face to come fully awake, and then leaned back against the seat. Half of me says we're idiots for not doing exactly that.
And the other half?
I haven't figured the other half out yet.
Here he comes.
They both slid down in their seats as Jenkins' garage door rolled up and his car backed out. He passed by them and headed out of the neighborhood. Hey, you have your pick gun? Sean asked.
I have a pocket, so I have my pick gun.
Hit the house, see what you can find. I'll tail Jenkins and then we'll hook back up.
Okay, but how do I get back?
Call a cab.
Gee, thanks.
And don't get caught. Breaking and entering is very bad. It's a felony, in fact. Michelle climbed out of the Land Cruiser and watched for a moment as Sean sped off in pursuit of the other vehicle. She looked both ways and was pleased that the morning was gloomy and ill-lit, with even tendrils of fog drifting through the trees that were spaced in between the houses. She walked up to the front stoop of Jenkins's house and knocked, just in case anyone was watching her. She gazed through one of the side windows next to the door and saw the alarm pad on an interior wall. It was blinking red, which meant it was engaged. It can never be easy, can it? She slipped around the back, keeping to the shadows thrown by the house. Because of the alarm system, front and rear doors were out. Her pick gun was useless. That left one alternative. She eyed a small window that was reachable by the rear deck. Bathroom, she deduced. She looked behind her. No homes here. There were just stands of trees dense enough to provide good cover. Her knife made short work of the window lock. She slid it open, praying that the windows weren't wired to the alarm system, and clambered inside, dropping quietly to the floor next to the toilet. She closed the window behind her and went to the doorway, peering out. She eyed the ceiling and the corners of the hallway, looking for motion detectors. Seeing none, she moved carefully out into the hall. She froze when she heard scurrying feet. The little dog scooted around the corner and came to a stop in front of her, yapping. Then it rolled over onto its belly, and she knelt down to scratch its stomach.
Okay, little guy, want to tell me where all the deep, dark secrets are hidden?
She quickly searched the rooms on the main level and found nothing. It was on her search of the top floor that she found Jenkins's home office. It was small, with a desk and chair and a shelf filled with books, mostly on planes and FAA requirements. An Apple computer sat on the desk. She sat and hit some keys, but a password was required and she didn't have one. She tried half a dozen based on Jenkinson's birth date and other personal data, which she had gotten from the DMV records. None of them worked, which didn't surprise her. She tapped her fingers on the desktop. If she had her truck, she could just sneak the whole computer out and let Edgar break into it. But she couldn't walk down the street with a 24-inch Apple computer under her arm and hail a cab. Edgar, she called him. She said,
I have a little problem. I'm house-sitting for a friend of mine, and he said I could use his computer, but he forgot to give me the password, and he's not answering phone or email. Anyway, can you help me out?
What brand of computer is it?
An Apple.
It'll take some time.
Great. How much time?
At least a minute. Michelle smiled.
I love you, Edgar.
There was a long moment of silence. I'm actually seeing someone, Ms. Maxwell.
Good for you, Edgar. My loss.
He took her through a series of assaults on the computer. In less than a minute, the hard drive came to life.
I'm in. Thanks.
You're welcome. And Ms. Maxwell?
Yes?
You're not really house-sitting, are you? I didn't think so. I just helped you break into someone's computer, didn't I?
It's all for a good cause, Edgar.
Okay, if you say so.
Goodbye, Edgar.
Goodbye. And I'll let you know if things don't work out with the person I'm currently seeing.
Okay. Thanks.
Michelle clicked keys and accessed as many files as she could. She also found a flash drive in the desk and downloaded to it as many files as she could find that seemed pertinent. She jerked around when she heard a siren in the distance. She ejected the flash drive, used her jacket to wipe her prints off the keyboard, rose, and ran back out of the room. She hurtled down the stairs, even as the siren grew closer. Did I trip some silent alarm? The little dog yapped at her heels as she raced to the bathroom, opened the window, and cantilevered over the sill, landing on her feet. She jumped off the deck and ran not toward the street but into the woods behind the house. She came out on the other side and fast walked to the same major intersection from last night. She didn't see a cab, but she did board a bus that carried her to the metro. From there, she grabbed a cab and rode that back to their office. Along the way, she called Sean.
Where are you?
Just pulling into Heron Air Service at Dulles. Traffic sucked even heading out of town. What about you? She quickly explained to him what she had done and where she was. She fingered the flash drive.
I'm going to take the rental car we left here and see Edgar. Maybe he can find some stuff on the flash that will make sense.
Good idea. I'll join you as soon as I can. Michelle clicked off. Sean put his phone down just about the time the gun was placed against his head. Chapter 70. Peripheral vision. It was a necessity for many jobs. NFL quarterbacks had to have it so they wouldn't be crushed by charging defenders. Basketball referees needed it to cover all the goings-on around the court. And Secret Service agents needed it to prevent harm from coming to their protectees and themselves. Sean saw the gun and eyed the person holding it, all without moving his head. His elbow hit the horn, and the sound shattered the relative morning quiet around the airport. At the noise, the gunman's hand flinched just a bit, but it was enough to give Sean the space he needed to do what he did next. He grabbed the man's shirt and jerked him forward. His head collided with the hard metal of the cruiser's doorframe. Blood spattered on Sean along with bits of a tooth from the man's mouth. Then the gunman slumped down to the asphalt. Sean already had the cruiser in gear and the wheels spinning. He punched the gas to the floor, and the truck shot out of the parking lot. He looked in the side mirror and saw the man slowly get to his feet and stagger sideways before falling down again. It wasn't Jenkins. It was someone else. Shit, Sean muttered. He'd been spotted. That did not bode well for anyone he cared about, particularly Tyler and Kathy. He got on the phone and called Michelle. He talked as he drove, filling her in. I never saw the guy until the last second. It was my screw-up.
I distracted you with my call.
I can chew gum and talk at the same time, he snapped. At least, I used to be able to.
Should we tell Wingo?
No, he's already close to going off the deep end. This will send him there for certain.
So what now?
I'll meet you at Edgar's. Hopefully he can flesh out some of the computer files for us so we can get a direct line on these bastards before it's too late. An hour later, Sean pulled to a stop in front of Edgar's farmhouse. The skies had partially cleared and the sun was doing its best to poke through the clusters of gray clouds. He noted that Michelle's rental vehicle was already there. He would have expected no less with the way she drove. He touched the hood of her car as he passed. It wasn't even warm. She'd been here a while, probably smoked her wheels the whole way, and never gotten a ticket. He shook his head and kept going. He knocked and then walked in the house. Michelle was hunched over Edgar's shoulder as he was gazing at his multiple screens on his plywood desk. Edgar said, "She was in house sitting. She was breaking and entering. That's a felony." "Yeah, I told her the same thing. Is the coffee fresh?" asked Sean, eyeing the cup in her hand. "My brain is mud." Edgar gave him a significant look. Sean started to say something, but then obviously decided not to even bother. Michelle said,
"He has a Keurig. Take your pick."
Sean left the room, made his cup of coffee, rejoined them, and perched on the edge of Edgar's desk. "So what do we have?"
"A lot of files to go through."
"What about the other stuff?" asked Sean. "The IP trail on the email from the blogger's source." "I've broken through 3 of 5 barriers," answered Edgar. "Hey, that's great." Edgar said, "The remaining 2 are proven hard to crack. The person knows what he's doing." Sean's excited look faded. "Well, if you can't crack it, I don't think anyone can, Edgar." "I didn't say I couldn't. I just said they were proving difficult." Michelle cradled her cup of coffee and pointed at the screen.
"But there might be something here."
Sean squinted at the screen. "What am I looking at?" "On the surface, it's an invoice for jet fuel," said Edgar.
"But looks can be deceiving."
"What do you mean?" In response, Edgar hit a few keys. The page they were looking at turned into a jumble of symbols that made no sense at all. "I've seen that before," said Sean. "Well, my computer goes haywire and turns my document to gibberish." "It's simply a failure of the computer to read the document